You're listening to a podcast of a program produced in 2013 as part of Aloud, a series of dynamic conversations, readings, and performances that take place in the Mark Taper Auditorium at the historic Downtown Central Library in the heart of Los Angeles. These programs are presented by the Library Foundation of Los Angeles, which supports the Los Angeles Public Library. To support Aloud or learn about the entire podcast collection, please visit www.lfla.org/aloud. I asked Juan Felipe for a title for tonight's reading, and without much hesitation, he came up with El Planeta for Plankton to Afghanistan. And at first, I thought we needed some, perhaps, modification. But after going back to Juan Felipe's amazing body of poems, it felt exactly right, because nothing is excluded from Juan Felipe's definition of poetry, the smallest and the largest, the ordinary, the tragic, the joyful. Juan Felipe has said in an interview, and I loved this quote, "Perhaps one of the most accessible diamonds on earth is poetry. You can easily pick it up and easily wear it and easily give it away. It's very precious, but you can only find it because it's yours. You have it already, and you can easily polish it and craft it. You can easily share it with others." That's one way of talking about it. The other way of talking about it is that it comes very naturally to me. It's just the way my mind works. Juan Felipe Herrera, as you know, is our current California Poet Laureate, or as he says more colorfully, he is the laureate. He has the laureate lowrider car. And I think he actually really did, as we were hearing about that. He is a professor in the creative writing department at UC Riverside and has published numerous volumes of poetry, prose, theater, children's books, and young adult novels, including Half of the World in Light, New and Selected Poems, which received many awards, including the National Book Critics Circle Award. He's also a performance artist and activist on behalf of migrant and indigenous communities and at-risk youth. He grew up saturated, as he says, in the atmosphere of great storytelling, moving with his parents through migrant camps in the San Joaquin Valley, and in later years earned master's degrees from Stanford and the University of Iowa. And in his most recent work, which he'll read from tonight, he turns his gaze to Africa. His new book is called Senegal Taxi. In addition to reading from his own work tonight, we asked Juan Felipe to invite two very talented younger poets to read with him tonight and then have a conversation about being a poet in the world. And he invited Marisa Urrutia Gedney and Freddy Lopez, and we're delighted to welcome them both tonight. Freddie is going to read first tonight, that is right. Freddie Lopez is a poet, writer, rapper, and performer from East Palo Alto. He's currently an undergraduate at UC Riverside. Let's hear it for UC Riverside, where he was recently in the cast of the play Stars of Juarez, written by Juan Felipe Herrera, and he co-founded a self-expression organization called Art of the Poor. And Marisa Urrutia Gedney is a native Angelina. She's a writer and educator. She is currently the director of programming for the awesome organization 826 LA, where she helps students write and publish their stories. So now let's join our three poets for a foray into what Juan Felipe has called, quote, "the plankton-like, Picasso-like, Kandinsky-like chromatics of heart fire, short line enlightenment meditations, double shock to the present life of what is going on in our diagonal world, war here, peace there, making it all right with these oceanic voices."
Hello, everybody. Let's start off with a spoken word. Here we go. Never letting their lack of reading, writing, words, and letters fetter nor hinder them from living a better life together for the welfare of themselves and their children. My parents migrated from Mexico like birds flying, trying to find and endeavor a place with better weather. In effect, they came to this country by acts of nature and a bunch of schemes by the U.S. to extract them for cheap labor. But how can you blame her? My mom as a housemaker, doing the best she could to give all six of her kids her undivided time and care, while Pops found a job as a produce clerk, which I never entirely agreed with because it was like cheek and tooth to that insidiously destructive farm labor. And even though our economic paradigm slightly shifted, we did not escape the poorness nor the danger, as lower class Mexican society once again threw us along the passage of the esophagus of destitution, where the jaws of schools clamp at you and attempts to sever forever and dismember you from your culture and your roots forever. Here's what I remember. Class full of Latino, African American, and other ethnics. Besides ABCs and 1, 2, 3's, teacher telling us to shh, be quiet, sit still, have some ethic. I look around me, all I see is contorted faces, bodies shaking, lungs ticking, tongues bitten, souls hitting, sweat dripping. It just never felt normal. It's like school wasn't teaching us. It was more like culture and intellectual torture. That was the first one. And I recited that poem to a group of youth, and they actually wrote something sort of inspired by it, but it's a little different. It talks about their some memories of theirs. Here's their copies. And both of theirs, we gave them a template to get started, get initiated, get started. And the template was, I remember. So this is how it starts. First one goes, I remember when... Well, yeah, I'll start with this one. I remember... When I was little, I was never able to write a title because I was an alien. My first day was really hard. The teacher pulled my card. I have come a long way, but I know I'll get there someday. That's by Rafael Perez. He's like 13. And this one's by another kid. This one's anonymous. He didn't write his name. Here he goes. I remember when I used to play tag. It was actually the other day. I guess I never really grew up because this tag ain't no game to play. I get influenced when I sit in a room bumping music. Feels like the beat, lyrics, and marker begin to collaborate to create something stronger than a simple game. That was that one. And this one, I wrote it in... I wrote it for, this is for Cesar Chavez. There was a commemoration for him in Riverside because they built a statue. I don't know if y'all heard of it. So I wrote this for that. It's a sonnet. I wrote it in Juan Felipe's class. Here it goes. Fertile soil for Cesar Chavez. What's the love we share with Mother Earth when she is obliged to shrivel wings and freeze backs cracking and collapsing souls over loads of dirt? And labyrinth purple-green mirrors keeping us trapped and snapping vines that suck the path of veins dry. So when torn off, blood squirts in a slow swirl, draining away the visions of a thumping third eye. There's an umbilical connection ripping as it uncurls. But what's a mother to children who supply no dignity? To brothers who abuse of the other with impunity? In the name of dirty deeds, flat trees, and bigotry, deforming the natural path of balance and unity. The more these men dig and disfigure her heart, the more that men like Cesar Chavez will rise apart. How's that one? All right. And this one is called Music, Songs, Passion. I actually did a collage, and then I cut out certain random words from the collage. And this poem is an organization of all those words that I cut out. I meditated on it for like an hour, and I kind of puzzled it together. And this is what came out. Music, songs, passion. Live, rebel, nostalgia style, music festivals, rock the casa. Step by step, I practice movements in my mind. And talking about music, I'm gonna do a rap for y'all, which is also poetry. Alright, this one's called Dearest Love Endeavor. I'll leave it at that. Here we go. It's like a love letter written to a beat called Dearest Love Endeavor. My dearest love endeavor. I'll write to you this letter with hope and broken pleasure, 'cause I still haven't met you, or have I? And maybe I'm waiting confirmation, or probably it could be that both our hearts are still in conversation, or riding and cruising and driving like seniors on vacation, or chilling, relaxing like sweat lodge meditation. And if not, I'll betcha they're dancing for the cries of this planeta. Y yo soy un poeta. They often say that Spanish is the most romantic romantic language. Así es que cómo estás, mi vida, ojalá que sigas levantando la anima de los demás. Pa' arriba con tu carácter que alumbras y tus palabras divinas que salen directamente del cielo del corazón. Como dragona con plumas, aquí te va esta canción para que muevas las caderas de la vida como las de una pantera en alerta con convicción y melodía. All right, everybody put one hand in the sky. Just swerve it side to side. At it, girl, forever, but don't ever forget to give and to remember to see life like December, the family festivities and also the tamales, regardless of the weather. So keep your soul in motion. I'm feeding from those energies, cause honestly your eyes to me are like some crystal balls of memory, with every single season shining light upon their sky. But I can also see the many things I can't explain. They often say that English is a complicated language, but it doesn't really faze me, it just works to my advantage. See, it helps you understand me, cause I really like a challenge. Look, language is my weapon, but freedom is my profession. I'm fighting against oppression, asphyxiating our souls, our bodies and our minds, with money, worries and loathe. So you know I keep it conscious, right next to the hip-hop congress, while I starve to keep it pure, with all of art of the poor. Sincerely yours, Freddy, aka Flopez. Thank you.
To be here. Last June, I had the pleasure of spending a week in New Mexico with Juan Felipe and a few other Dos Brujas in the house, and he dubbed us the Adobe Dojo. And you heard, and I heard there was a Bandusa Rebellion in LA, so I don't know if any of you guys are here, but I mean, even just being here today, Juan Felipe makes you feel like writing is, you know, you are that diamond, you're producing that diamond, and that whatever happens, happens, and it's okay. He said this quote to us during that week: we work with sparks and not the fuel that's on fire. And here are my sparks, and I hope you just feel some of the magic that he can create and for other people and then with himself. So this one's called What the Body Shows. At the bottom, the base, the trunk, at the place that sticks to the ground are women. Women in their hose and comfy shoes, still cute in a two-piece suit, long beaded necklaces. It doesn't matter how wrinkly your hands are. When you gossip, you gotta look good. A woman with her hair done 40 style, a hand on her hip, a red smile against orange brick. Are we only strong on the bottom? Another on the edge of the bed, boobs hanging far apart, seen through a button-up blouse that she sewed for a party that night. Two of them, same height, same dark, almost black eyes, holding hands in a driveway, white folded socks inside Oxfords. And that's how you walk around, with other women, carrying each step, landing every jump, cushioning hard, clumsy, or aged falls. In your calves, rooting down to the earth, they are closest to their mother. At the top, the start, the highest reaching point, the place that gets the most sun, hang gold-adorned picture frames with color and cactus. Not the kind from the desert that you've never even seen, but a gift for an illness you endured, and it made it through, you made it through. Emerging, more pink lines, green splashed around, and one gold-studded cactus, plump, fat, full of water. It must have just rained. This one is about my mom. Her name doesn't say enough. Were you mad when your Indio daughter gave us a revolutionary name, a hard-to-say name, names with R's that roll, and tanned her skin to deep, dark brown, parted hair all the way down to her butt? There was no mistaking that she was a shiny, happy Chicana fighting for her rights, getting around in her own VW bus. But then she introduced herself as Beverly, and white, black, brown all were confused. It's not quite the movie star name you thought it was. Where did a Beverly come from? She drove from East LA to Commerce, knew she was poor, really poor, but she had her no-accent tongue, perfect Spanish on the inside, and her name, Noita, can be added to that. She's pure three syllables of you fit right in. You gave her this because she didn't come out with milky skin or eyes like a messy blue storm. You gave her this and she passed it on. Didn't you understand what happens when people get here? They want to be more American, more not what their skin or voice or smells or sadness shows. Were you mad when you found out that your granddaughter wishes to speak Spanish like it rolled right out? All natural, no books, no photographic memory to learn the tenses. Her name doesn't say enough. Were you mad to find out we are who we really are? And this is actually one that I wrote last June. I have to thank Sochi, who's in the crowd, for dancing with me over lunch one day. Juan Felipe, it came up that we, three of us, dance, that we're in the Adobe Dojo. I do danza azteca, Sochi does folclórico, or did folclórico, and Sandra, Puerto Rican bomba. So he said, okay, teach us how to dance. So we did, and then we wrote about it. So here's what happened. Teach me how. You don't need drums to dance. You don't need smoke to pray, she said as she doused her forehead and mine with agua florida in a gym we practiced in every week. The sage popped up in the desert, leaves in a bag brought on a plane made small for boarding. 4 steps forward, I dance. 4 steps backward, I call to the group. Spinning knees high up, and we could have jumped on top of the mountain. The Dios of this place shows itself. Form a line, a circle, put something in the middle, yourself or a pile of rocks. Let's write this danza. Dig a hill to the center until the stomp comes. Just move with hips, you know this. A crown of roses, the elastic to a magenta sky skirt. Hanging from the middle, all the saved braids with the felt that the mummies and the nanas and the dadas cut off. Walking is a dance, go there. Make all the noise you want, laugh real loud, sound crazy, and pull up your skirt, show it off in a spin. The trumpet player watches, falling into the hole too. All these things new to him, seeing free for the first time. Why does the sky have a big pink skirt hanging from it? He thinks, with his hands behind his back. Forcing them there, keeping them there, take both spirits, get out fast. Estamos practicando hablar pa, pie, pow, biz, bang, pow. Put away your go-go boots and get out your bare feet. Hit it, the dirt goes up and brings in the nothing of the mind we've been waiting for. Here's a clearing, let's not miss it. Make a circle, keep the beat, pa, pie, pow. I can't hear you. Wave your elbows at me, cluck your feet at me. Do what you want with me, I'll give you the beat. Pa, pie, pow, take it, maestro, it's yours. Here you go. Can you feel me now? Can you show me how? Bring me to this now. I need you to teach me how. And these two are love poems. Firefall. I open my eyes and remember I love you. I didn't think that was going to happen. Okay. Firefall. I open my eyes and remember I love you. When our faces pushed together and I didn't mind the scratch of beard, warm breath so close, the flowers of the bedspread kicked off in the middle of the night because I need to kick something. Body a tangle. I fight in my sleep for what's supposed to cover both of us. Wires firing from bone to muscle to anger, writhing with confusion. But I always have the answer. I am always right. Not when a no-words long night comes. I can only hear Christmas carols and children singing Silent Night in memory of other children. All of them, or only the ones from those classrooms. I think of what I will say in the morning, a commitment to not cause harm or unleash everything. Las Fridas fight. sharing the same blood, boiling, popping for air. Furioso, the word keeps saying itself, wishing gold swans would swim it away with grace. That only happens on stage. And what about when the map turns topographical? There are so many more mountains than we thought. Yosemite Valley is the smallest part on this square of Sierra. Look, the triangle is so small, and we wonder what it's like in Cascade Cliffs, Horizon Ridge, Mount Star King, May Lake, and Merced Peak. The John Muir Trail crosses through most of this big square. But I'm afraid of no bathrooms. And what about when I want a soft, squishy pillow? Where will I find a blanket to steal in Pine City? Should we go to the middle of it all instead? Stand on top of Glacier Point, make an all-day fire, and then throw it down the side of a mountain. Yell to the whole valley while fire turns to water and doesn't disappear. This one's called La Lunada. La Lunada, you called it, as you roped me into going down to 24th Street for a night of who knows what. We practiced our, if someone hollers at you, I'll hold you tight and you don't say nothing pose. Just in case. And just in case you wanted to stay here, to live with me under this moon of fog in July and no stars. You saw how all these young poets made their chance right here, friends performing at taquerias and laundromats. And the drum beats to an LA girl who gets up there and reads the best story of the night. About her mom. She's by the river and she makes you laugh. You don't tell me, but your face is wet and you don't wipe it away. You have all these moments where you've seen little kids with their moms on the bus, and that's when you knew you had to go home, to leave. That's when I knew you would never stay. You saw that your lines weren't tied to this city. You could take yourself anywhere. La Lunada, you called it when I didn't have a name for you. This is not a man on the moon story. You couldn't be sent off like that. You said you couldn't put some fake fire under you, all alone, and shoot somewhere not worth mentioning. The night glow will follow you, of that I'm sure. Thank you.
So much. This is just a little extra appreciation of Juan Felipe before he reads. I first actually heard about Juan Felipe maybe 30 years ago from a mutual friend of ours, Joma, a.k.a. John Marin, or John Marin, a.k.a. Joma, crazy poet. And this morning I said, you know, Juan Felipe's reading tonight. I emailed him, and do you want to send a little intro? And it arrived just before the reading, so I have to read it to you, Juan Felipe. From cilantro man to Mayan drifter to being a vampire on Whittier Boulevard to the cantador de las palomas singing to todos los niños de Cesar Chavez in the fields of his youth, and now onto the digital wizard of awe stage as poet laureate of Califia, Juan Felipe es un hermano of many voices and faces. Few poets, short of Whitman or Neruda, have experienced as much, less embodied in a lifetime, yet we still have him here tonight. Twinkle of the eye fresh, a true bato loco, knocking more face games out of the park and blithely spinning out more East Los Coans than Bardo Plains. Have Buddhas, Dios mío, the head and heart of this amigo is on fire and only besos y abrazos will save us. Enjoy, coyotes and Ginsburgs of the future, beware. Herrera has only begun to howl.
Oh, that was too generous. A big hand for Louise, a big hand for Freddie, and a big hand for Marisa. Oh, beautiful. Aren't they fabulous? Aren't they fabulous? Amazing. I'm really happy that you're here and that you read your beautiful poems, beautiful work. I remember starting out here in L.A. back in 67. When I got here with Chicano luggage on the bus to UCLA, I walked out with two big boxes with rope around them and pan dulce stains on them. looking for the dorm, looking for the dormitory, dormitory. And it's a strange word, isn't it? And it was so far away from the bus stop that I actually took a nap on the lawn somewhere in Westwood. And I finally made it to the dormitory, el dormitorio. So those were the years. And we didn't really have, as far as I could see, well, I never really took a poetry class, my mother was my role model. Yeah, my mother was my role model. She had come from Mexico City, right after the Mexican Revolution. So kind of Pancho Villa was in there somewhere. With her mom, my grandmother, Juanita, in around 1918, and made it to Juarez. I don't know how they did it. Imagine from Mexico City all the way to Juarez on the El Paso, Mexico-Chihuahua border. So my mother wanted to be a singer and a theater person, and that wasn't, it didn't happen. The men in the family and in general didn't allow their sisters to go beyond the household. So she got held back. And those were the years when Frida Kahlo was a painter. So if you can gauge it a little bit there, 20s and the 30s. But she sang and she recited poems by heart from first and second and third grade. She was in a asilo, in an orphanage for a while also. So she would tell me those stories and the stories of the women and the family. And my father played the harmonica. He came before my mother came. He came up he got on a train as a 14-year-old. Brinqué el tren. Cuando tenía 14 años, brinqué el tren, Juanito. Más 14, me brinqué el tren. He jumped the train. Y nos fuimos derechito a Denver. All the way to Denver. Colorado. Red. Y hacía tanto frío que cuando escupía se volvía un hielito. It was so cold it turned into ice. So that was around 1904. So by the time it was 1904 in Denver, he had his little suit on and sombrero, and he was 19, and he took a photograph. And somehow he learned to write. Cuando yo aprendí a escribir en inglés, Juanito, yo compraba palabras por un centavo. I used to buy words for a penny, Juan Felipe. Juanito, listen to me. Stop that. Listen to me. Stop that homework. So that's how he learned. ¿Qué es eso, Jacinto? What is that? ¿Qué es eso? Milk. Es milk. ¿Qué? ¿Leche? ¿Cómo se dice? How do you say that? How do you say leche in English? Escucha. I'm talking to you in English, but I'm really talking in Spanish. He goes, milk. Oh, okay. Milk. No, milk. Oh, okay. Milk. So that's how my father learned English. And he paid him a penny. Yeah, paid Jacinto a penny. You could buy a suit with a penny, you know. So he taught himself how to speak English, buying words for a penny. And he used to work as a cowboy, as a hand in los ranchos de Colorado and Wyoming. Wyoming. Escucha, Cheyenne, Wyoming. So he told a lot of stories, you know. So I grew up with stories. So those were my first poets and storytellers and my teachers. And when I got to UCLA, everything was game, you know. All the raza, all the young people from Norwalk and East LA, you know, we got in, you know. Yeah, we got in. You go, hey, look at me. Orale, hey, watcha, I got my briefcase. Get the bonus. Look at that. Look at that. It's empty, but don't tell anybody. So all the guys, you know. So all the guys from Norwalk, you know, and East LA with their big Samsonite suitcases. Órale, mira, I'm studying. But I'm not going to class, but I'm studying. Okay, I'm studying, carnal. Guachale, órale, yeah. And there was no Chicano studies. I mean, we just get together in a circle. We had Chicano studies, but it's not what you, it's, it was just a circle of people. Hey, let's form a circle. Chicano studies, what do you think? Ah, yeah. So I was supposed to read, I think. So, what happened, Luis? Amiga's gonna get me. So we got in a circle and we brought out, you know, they were good books. We did have a professor, you know, like Ernie Gutierrez, I think. Okay. Ernesto Galarza, okay? I want you guys to read Ernesto Galarza. I hope I got it right. Ernesto Galarza, Barrio Boy, okay? You got to read about his journey, muchachos. Hey, you, Gato, is that what you call yourself? Hey, Gato, pon atención, okay? So, you know, that was Chicano studies. That was Chicano studies. Yeah, man, I read my Galarza. Yeah, you know, Barrio Boy, just like me. It's just like me, all right. And then and there was Black Student Union. Black Student Union was walking around. Yeah, you know, Black Student Union. Yeah, you know, Black Student Union. Yeah, you know, it was Black Student Union. You know, autobiography Malcolm X. Orale, Malcolm X. So you had Malcolm X and you had Galarza. And then you had, you know, I Am Joaquin with Quirky Gonzalez on a mimeograph sheet. As you know, the poem, I Am Joaquin, Yo Soy Joaquin, about the history of colonization in Mexico, indigenous peoples, and the evolution of the Chicano mutant. So that was all going on at the same time. And the Students for Democratic Society, SDS. So you have these very hot political groups, student groups, coming together. And at one time, there weren't enough professors that were African-American or that were dealing with the kind of issues we were involved in, Chicano studies and Chicanos and Chicanas. So we just decided, might as well close the whole place down. So we closed the whole university down. We closed the whole thing down. Hey, ¿dónde está mangas? You better get mangas down here. Why? Because we're going to close it down. So what? I was going to go to the Gypsy Way and get a pizza. Nah, man. You know, because the hard dudes and the hard gals, we're closing it down. And no, come on, Rita. We want to close it down, Rita. Come on. I got to. You know, my jefita's going to get me if I don't get a, you know, get an A. No, Juan. No, man. We're going to close it down today. Come on, Rita. No. Yeah, we're going to close it down. Come on. So the whole thing went down. All of a sudden, UCLA is closed down. There's around 300 police circling the university. We're on the roofs jumping up and down. Yeah, we close it down. Yeah, you want to hire some raza? You got to hire some raza right now. You understand? Affirmative action? Let's make it affirmative. Well, it went down. And that's where I started performance. I said, hey, you know, this is our moment. I told some of the guys, I'll read one poem. This is our moment. I said, this is our moment. You know what? Let's put together a performance piece, okay? And you know what? You know, Rudy, you're going to do the police. You're going to represent the police. Yeah, I can do that. I know about police, yeah. Okay, just get your little sombrerito and you got it together. And on and on. So we did the media, the police, and the people, and the workers, and the students. And all of a sudden we had a performance piece for the audience of 5,000 students at Grand Ballroom. Yeah. So those were the days where I started out as a poet. I guess that was a vignette. I was a vignette. when I started. There was a vignette, a performative moment on my early, my origins, my performative origins, the literary roots of my iambic pentameter. So, you know. So it was really open, you know. What I'm saying is that the moment was open for creativity and discovery and experiment. And I think that's something that it's good to keep. And given the time, given the moment now in particular. And the plankton are little tiny, as you know. The parentheses. Everybody say parentheses. You know, plankton are these little tiny organisms, as you know. And they're all together. And you can fish them out with a net on the water, and on the bay or on a lake. And they're all scrambling together, and they all go towards the light. Wherever there's a little light source, they go toward it. And they're the ones that create they transform the light into food. So that we can, eventually, that we can grow as human beings, and all animals and plants can gain from their lives. And from plankton to Afghanistan. And that's what we're doing. In this case, I wanted to reach Africa as best as I could. I remember that back in 71, 72, Alurista, one of my good friends I grew up with from Tijuana, we still hang out in Tijuana as well, who became an amazing poet, as you know as well, a Chicano poet and a great trailblazer. He used to have these pink papers where he used to type. And one of them he said, Amerindia, Africa, Asia. And he said, these are the three areas that we have to address. Those days we were making manifestos, remember? We were all involved in manifestos. And one of Alurista's manifestos and position papers, well, we said, might as well write a position paper. Yeah, we might as well, you know? You might as well, you're going to write your name, you might as well go all the way. Might as well go all the way. Everybody say, all the way. So we decided to go all the way, and Alurista said, Amerindia. I said, Amerindia, what is that? He said, that's indigenous continent. I go, okay, all right. I'm with you. And Africa. I said, what? Africa, yeah. Yeah, I said, we have to come together. We have to learn. We have to reach. We have to establish unity. I was saying, okay, I'm with that. Yeah, I'm with that too. He says, and Asia. Okay, I said, Asia. Okay, you know, I want to do a little research. But, you know, I got it. So this was around 1972. And it was like a proposal for Chicano poets and Latino poets and writers and the community at large. And I thought that was a very good point. But no one ever really went back to it in our group or in general. And a couple of years ago, I decided to write about Darfur. And I'll read you one very tiny short piece since I already burned up all the time. And I wanted to bring out the voices of as many peoples and things as well. So this is one of the bombs that's coming down on Darfur, on the villages. And it's a Russian bomb. It's an Antonov bomb. And the bomb is saying, here I go, down below. Here I go, down below. Who sent me? I don't know. Here I go, down below. And a little girl, the three children that are ghosts already. And she must be 8, 9 years old. Wait for me, Abdullah, wait for me. I'm kneeling down, lifting a school with leaves, raise a classroom with sticks, clean the chalkboard with wind, set the table with mud, write these letters with my forehead, learn all there is to know in the world. And then there's the fly. The village fly. And as you know, the Janjaweed are the paramilitary that were kind of the puppets to wreak havoc and massacres in the villages, And here's the village fly. Janja, we say, batter down, batter down. They think they have struck gold. They pause and pretend to examine me. They are not the patient kind, I must say. They idled, their hands pulling their net bag ready, or their muddy sandals, or their kalash in position. I know their game. They do not dare strike me. They will not risk having the kalash break into its 24 moving faces. The camel killer, the janja weed, prides himself on cleanliness, on order, if I may use that term. Well, I consider a pile of dung, but janja weed does not study. Janja weed does not study. That, comrade, is where I come in. So that's the fly. And I wanted to give different voices that we wouldn't expect to everybody, to everything. And here's a village ant. Everybody say, introducing the village ant. And leg muscle and hand scab and eye sinew and dust and groin and sweat on nose and green on nose and red from nose and tongue crawl and bird beak and bird eye and bee head rot and thorn and back and half fly on back and winds float and hairs burn and tiny worm on baby head and worm again and lice on baby hand and green again and blue blood on woman belly and blood on black and blood on dog and yellow skin on bone. And let's do the bomb again. We'll do it together. Children crumbling. Children hiding. Here I go. Down below. With one eye. Made of fire. Here I go. Down. Sahel, the village girl. I'm spelling Africa. I am spelling Sudan. I am spelling Darfur. I am spelling Janja weed. I'm spelling the name of the president of Sudan, Omar Hassan Ahmad al-Bashir. Facing Ibrahim, Janja weed stood. His killing was done. When Ibrahim looked up, he knew that the killing was just beginning, even though his village was shattered and smoldering. Everyone had been cut down by the kalash. Even if the barrel was empty, the killer still loved to hear it crackle and admired his touch on the target. Kill what next? Kill what next? Ibrahim said. So that's Ibrahim, who's the older brother. And I'll read you a little bit from the Kalashnikov. I said I gotta have the Kalashnikov speak. We'll miss something very big if I don't. The Kalashnikov, AK-47. After the ashes cleared, I fell by the stumps of flesh. I heard their whispers and furies. I could not stop listening and peering into them. As my master slept, and here's Ibrahim talking. Nazra, my mother, Ibrahim said, I do not want to talk about her, yet I must mention her, he said. She will not forget how she was taken, how she stood up, how she was beaten, raped, how she was ripped apart behind the tree. Sahil, the village girl. I am making a school with leaves. I am learning all there is to know in the world. I am learning all there is to know in the world. Abdullah? Abdullah? So I'm going to read just a little bit more from the Kalashnikov. In my language of Kalash, I spoke to them. For the first time I said, help me. take me with you. Wipe my face. I am scarred and bloody. I suffer from tempest, from implacable winds between my temples. I want to taste what you taste. Cruel bread, stews of knees and boiling tongues, putrid waters. I only know the young hands and the uncertain fingers of my master. So I was born. So was my destiny. It is the mountains that I love. I call to them and call to them as I fall to your side, as my master sleeps. My name is Kala. Thank you, everybody. You guys are great. Oh, yeah.
Oh, Charlie. Charlie, Charlie. Oh, mic is on.
Should we go with that same question?
Sure, that was a good question. Yeah, you wrote some questions. And
wow. Well, earlier, Louise helped guide us, and we were just talking earlier about having, there are ways to have formal writing communities and formal writing help in the world, whether through school programs or things that we can sign up for. But there's also just the real natural writing help that we need as writers and that exists out there. So the question is, you know, just maybe talk about how you've created that for yourselves or stumbled upon it or found it, that sort of writing support, guidance, love. With your work?
My work, well, I started writing when I was like 15. I got the support. I used to go to an after school program just to hang out. It was just basically a little venue for me to vent. So I went there after school. It was actually Christian based. So we read the Bible a little. But the one of the coordinators, he wasn't too, he knew that we weren't too receptive to that. So, or he noticed it. So he incorporated hip hop into, I guess, his teachings and stuff. He brought a boombox and started freestyling. I got really impressed by that, by knowing somebody who rapped. I never met anybody before. And then he inspired me and the other two kids who stayed for that part of the program. To go home and write. A friend wrote a spoken word, and I started writing rap lyrics, and that's how I started writing. That's where I kind of found my writing community. Other than that, I didn't know anybody else who wrote or did anything poetic, and yeah, I guess till I was 15, I started to get into it a little more, and we continued. He noticed that we liked that sort of thing, and so he continued to implement it more. And then we ended up making a little rap group called Reality Family. That's why I got this. I never got the family. it's another story, actually. It's a part. But, yeah, that's how I started writing. I started just writing rap lyrics. And that really inspired me. And then I went to college, and that's when I really started. And I kind of transitioned. Not really transitioned. I kept writing, but I started writing more spoken word. Because, why did I do that? I didn't have the audio with me to do the rap, so I just did it a cappella. And it sounded pretty good, spoken word. So then I started writing more. Then I started writing more stuff without the instrumental behind it, without the beat. And then I noticed that I was good at that. So I wrote a little more. But I guess the community I was in, we never really read the literature. We more wrote. So I'm still, to this day, I'm still kind of a little oblivious to some of the literature out there, poetry. literature. I wouldn't be able to talk too much about it, but I'm getting there and I'm learning about it. I'm reading a good amount now. And yeah, that's kind of my community that I grew up in.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of same for me in a way. I think I was in Bonehead English in high school. Mm-hmm. And I used to you see, now I don't want to go to the library and check out a book and write a big old report. You know what? I'm just going to write the story and give it a title. You know, in Bonehead English, you know. So the teacher said, you know, it's a good story, but what does it have to do with the title? I go, hey, you know. you gotta think about it.
Deep. It was real deep.
you gotta put some effort in there, Mrs. Conant. So I said, oh God, I need to, you know, relate the title to the story, because I never went back to the title. It was just a little takeoff spot. And then the moment came when, you know, remember teachers used to give us a little bag of words to create a little story with. So, you know, so well, today you get a little bag of words and please write a story, you know, a couple of paragraphs. And please, I want this in class assignment. Oh, yeah, you know, oh, you know, surreptitiously, okay. Yeah, surreptitiously. So you know, that's how I start getting into writing, by just creating my stories just off the bat as assignments. I think, and cartoons. I did a lot of cartoons, and playing with words. And I had been playing with words as a child with my mother, because she used to always be doing riddles and word games, almost mm-hmm. like, you know, kind of scare you sometimes. She goes, "Okay." I come from school, you know, chomping on a big old, you know, giant potato chip or something with. Or, you know, playing with gum, you know. You know, wearing gums as rings, you know. Hey, yeah, I'm really cool, Mom, you know. Look at that purple gum ring. It's my magic. See that purple ball on my face? My magic dodgeball. You know, my magic. So she said, "Juanito, Juan, okay. Fui al mercado, compré varias comidas, casi lloré con ellas. What is that?" You know, fui al mercado, compré bellas, vine en la casa, lloré con ellas. I went to the marketplace, I cried with them. I brought them home and I cried with them. I went to the marketplace, bought beautifuls, I came home and I cried with them. You know, an adivinanza, mm-hmm. a riddle. So my mother was always doing riddles. So in a way, that's how I got myself going. Mm-hmm. Making up things in class and my mother's riddles, spontaneous word games. At home.
I definitely see that in you now. Yes.
It's in the genes.
Yeah. And then, you know, sure enough, when I got to UCLA, things exploded, you know, because African-American writers were hanging out with giant phonographs. You know, we got iPods today, mm-hmm. right? We got iPods and, you know, all the pods and eyes and stuff. And but back then, you'd have to hang out with a big old, you know, 40-pound phonograph. And you'd have to find a wall. Yeah, you know, all right, hey, check this out. You know, "I Love Supreme" by John Coltrane, you know. I go, hey, Cricket, hold on. Check this out. So that's how we were doing poetry, and that's how we kind of learned from each other. No one, right? No one ever said, "Well, hey, slow down, you know. You know, the stanzaic structure of that John Coltrane improvisation needs, you know, the short line is not necessarily working with the long line." So we never did that, you know. I was like 41 when I finally stumbled into a workshop. "Yeah, here I am. I'm ready."
Oh, I appreciate that you unrolled us from that, because I had been in those kind of workshops, and then something that you told us last summer was there are three streams or three rivers, the U.S. way of writing, and, you know, the multicultural outside of the U.S., you know, the world vision of that, and then your own. river and stream. And that blew my mind because, you know, that voice that you do, that is in me at least, you know, of like, do it this way, you have to do it this way, it has to sound like this and look like this, and you have to follow these rules. And rules are good, form is good, but it's not even just about the rules and form. I think that third river is about, it's about who you are and the stories that you tell, and that's what makes it, writing.
I think you got a point there. You know, it's today there's a billion voices. There always has been a million voices. And yet today I think many people like yourselves are louder, like this program. Let's give a big hand to this program. You know, it's like I think, you know, workshops are formal university workshops. I think the doors are either the doors are trembling or they're totally wide open now, because so many young people like yourselves are doing so many things. And like this program, it's not just the workshops or it's not just a small group. It's really everybody that's doing poetry and speaking and doing word art and performance and spoken word and hip-hop and rap. Mm-hmm. So there's no choice. There's really very... It's hard to ignore and deny what you're doing, what people are doing. You're right.
All right.
What brought the voice out for you?
Yes.
I first remember sitting under this pink tree that is in our front yard, and I would just write underneath the pink tree and make up stories about my Nana's friends. And but I didn't know I was a writer. I didn't know what that was. I just thought it's a thing you do when you're a little kid. And it wasn't until I got to college at UC Santa Barbara and the College of Creative Studies there that I had a professor that said, hey, you're a writer, you know, you should submit your portfolio of poems, and I got accepted into the literature department there. But that was the first time that I heard that, or that I started to feel that. But I look back on that and think about that as the first time, but in that moment I didn't feel it. I didn't feel like, oh yeah, now I'm a writer. You know, I was like, no, I don't know who you're talking about, but that's not me. These things that I'm writing aren't poems, they're just words. But so it wasn't until actually I did this thing in San Francisco at Intersection for the Arts and Kearney Street Workshop up there, and worked with Jenny Lim and Lorna de Cervantes and just a few other really amazing teachers and people that were in that workshop, other, you know, of different generations, and learned from them and thought, okay, this is writing. Yeah, there are other people writing together and sharing your stories and feeling good about it and crying together and laughing together. And that's when I felt like I was a writer.
Mm-hmm. Hi, my name is Aaron Higuretta, and I just wanted to know what constitutes a good poem for each of you guys.
Well, for me, constitutes it's complicated for me, I guess, because when it's on the page, it's different than when it's spoken.
How do you know when it's finished? How do you know when you're satisfied with that?
Oh, how I know when I'm satisfied with the poem? I do definitely revise it a couple times. Sometimes you just know it. It just, usually I, this is probably a little digressing, but I write in the mornings. That's when my brain is most fresh. And when I write something in the morning, I can finish it. If I start writing at night, I feel like I'm not done. But if I come back to it in the morning and work on it, I can feel like I know where I want to go with it. Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's just a mindset. Well, how are you feeling for me?
Yeah, you're right. That's a big question. You know, after all these years of goofing around with poetry and lighting myself up on fire with poetry kind of burning decades away in poetry, it's just the freest thing. You know, when we finally get to the freest way we can be, that's when it's poetry. Otherwise, it's you know, a lot of rules and regulations. So, yeah, be free.
Something happens. There's this magic that just, when you feel it, it's there. And I was just telling this to students today, you know, they always want to stop, or they always say, oh, I'm not finished. And I said, just share whatever it is. It doesn't have to be finished. But there's that human thing in us that we want something to be finished or to know mm-hmm. that it's done, that it's perfect. And, you know, you could keep revising a poem your whole life. You know, you could just keep rewriting the same poem your whole life if you really wanted to. Yeah. But I think, you know, you just have to settle with it and see how it does evolve. Maybe it evolves, you know?
Yeah. It's almost as if when it writes you, then it's done. When it writes you.
Yeah.
You're trying to, you know, control it. When it finally writes you and knocks you out, then you're good. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, when you, yeah.
Oh, thank you. This is a question for all of you. What are some of your literary influences? Who inspires you? What writers?
Okay. Like that?
You know, Louise Erdrich is a really big inspiration for me because even though she writes mostly novels, every sentence is a poem to me in all of her writing. And she creates really, really, really big worlds. And for me, my poems tend to be smaller, so I really appreciate the vastness of what she creates, and it's very inspirational.
Yeah. You know, it's, you know, I could say, I don't know what, you know, painters move me a lot. Painters move me a lot. You know, I'm really like, I get so lit up by looking at paintings and painters and you know, Jackson Pollock, David Alfaro Siqueiros, Frida Kahlo, and sculptors, you know, people that do sculpture. That just knocks me out. And I start to write. What's also cool is to open up the to have our own poetry. I don't know, wall or museum or I don't know what, but in our house, and have our parents who wrote and letters that they have, you know, little phrases that our parents and grandparents have loved, and have that there, and our singers, you know, blues singers, ranchera singers, and Yiddish sayings, and koans, and Zen meditations, and I think the more we do that, really crack open a children's writing, and put that up there, and then I think we'll get a good sense of what we really love. But if we go for that academic thing, that's cool too. But I think it's good to open it all up. It'd be fun, you know. It's fun because we all love all that. Mm-hmm. And you're right, Erdrich, yeah.
Mm-hmm. For me. I guess some rappers, Lupe Fiasco, I like listening to him and he inspires me. There's one called Residente from Calle 13. I don't know if y'all know him. His newer stuff is more conscious, more poetic to me. He inspires me too. Black Dot from The Roots, I like his flow, he's sick. For writers, Juan Felipe inspires me. Abani, just being around, I guess, poets at the university really inspired me, seeing the way that it, like the energy that it brings to them makes me want to be a poet. The energy that they express and that they have, their character, it just really motivates me to want to write. And yeah, like I said, my coordinator friend, him too. So people who practice poetry inspire me more, I guess, than reading from the paper, or have inspired me more than poets. But I'm starting. Langston Hughes, I like his stuff. I've been reading him lately, and yeah, it's nice.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. It's good. Yeah.
Oh, this is a question for everyone. If you couldn't be a poet or a writer, what would you do with your life?
I think for me the real answer probably, which I'd like to expect, you know, change it, but I think I would be a painter, but I would like to change it. But I think that's really the answer. Probably a baker, but I think that's really. I think that's really the answer. Yeah.
I guess the funny thing is that poetry is something that I do on the side, almost because my job, what I do in my life, as you know, what I say, my answer is that I'm a teacher. I coordinate student writing and things like that, and I've had to work really hard actually to fit my own writing into my life. So if I wasn't a writer, I would be a teacher.
Yeah,
me too. I'd be a teacher. And yeah, I don't think there's anything else. I enjoy being a teacher. I help host workshops, and I enjoy being with the kids. And yeah, it brings me a lot of joy after the workshops, after we went from workshops to learn shops to expression sessions. I don't like workshops. So we call them expression sessions, and then, yeah, we just go out there and express ourselves with the youth, and sometimes they come in a little drier with not too much energy, and then once we get going, once we get the ball rolling and they start drawing or writing poetry, it's really moving to see them kind of get that energy or get that spirit from writing and from being creative themselves. And then at the end, they leave all excited, and that kind of transfers into me, and I enjoy that, and I wouldn't mind doing that. Yeah, teaching, just in general, any type of teaching that I can be creative at, and I would probably be creative with math. I'd probably make some raps. It's been done before, too, so I've thought about it a little.
Hi, I'm Blake, and I'm actually working on a traveling poetry show right now for the summer, and we're about to enter workshops right now, and like two writers coming together to create a collaborative poem. Have you done that before, and how do you welcome someone else's writing style with yours to kind of create a concise, flowing poem?
Just let it flow.
Yeah.
What did somebody think?
I think you gave us this assignment last year. I remember being in the library with three people writing a poem, and it was hard first. It was, because you know, everyone's coming with different ideas and different styles and ways of approaching it. Some people like to just let it flow. Some people want to be, you know, different about it. But just a give and take, so that it is something that both people are creating and not just one person's vision, I guess.
I'm trying to think, remember if I've done one. I guess I have. I've collaborated in music songs. In music. My brain is somewhere else. Yeah, it definitely is a longer process, and you have to compromise with the other person. Let's see. It starts off just with an idea. I tend to work better with what other people give me sometimes. If they throw out an idea, that helps me get creative with it. If they write like a few lines, that'll help me feed off of it. And then I'll write from that. And, Yeah, I try not to be close, because it doesn't work. I try not to be too strict on what I wanted to do. And like he said, just let it flow and let it kind of take its own course.
I get the sense, yeah, you know. What I'm thinking is before you kiss, you got to dance. So if you want people, right? If you want people to come together and write, it's kind of hard, right? It's kind of hard to just walk in cold and, okay, I'll put my poem, you know, ubiquitous dawn light, you know, with your poem. It's kind of a cold moment, and so it's good to do stuff together before, to write together before you write together, right? So it's like dancing. So you got to kind of, you kind of get a groove going together, whether it's saying words out loud together, or making new physical work together. Mm. You know, being a tree, or saying something. What's a word for you, Marisa? That you like? What's a word?
Lines.
You like? So okay, everybody say lines.
Lines.
And what's one of your words that you like?
Orale.
Okay. Orale. And let's go with papas fritas.
Papas fritas.
So let's put them all together.
Lines. Orale. Papas fritas.
So now we're warming up. Now we're warming up. And then we can get to the putting words on paper. Because so putting words on paper together is kind of hard. You know, okay, here we're going to kiss now. Okay, put the lip out there. You know, 45 degree angle. Watch out, don't crash. So working with sounds and motions and words and voices, each other's voice, and then together, vocally, chorally, and then closer and closer to the table, closer and closer to the lines, scribbling together in one big piece of paper, together, scribble together, put words on the scribbles together, and then assemble the lines from the words on the scribbles together on the table that we sat together and we made sounds and movements together. So something like that.
From the master. Thank you all for getting the flow going, the three of you, and thank you all so much for being such a great audience tonight. Give another hand for our three poets. Thank you.
Aloud is made possible through support provided by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, Errant Fox, City National Bank, KPMG, Donna and Martin J. Wolfe, and the Bujaki Foundation. Additional support provided by the Los Angeles Public Library, the Council of the Library Foundation, the Stay Home and Read a Book Ball, and individual Library Foundation members. Media support provided by KCRW 89.9 FM, KUSC 91.5 FM, and LA Weekly. Aloud theme composed by Larry Karish.